Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Everyone to Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast, and a Star Wars podcast that likes to do things just a little bit differently than normal. I am one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as he is always, of course, the incredible, the incomparable, John Mills.
Hello. Thank you, Matthew. It's a pleasure to be here again.
Are you a Bond villain tonight, John?
Of course. I'm always a Bond villain. I have a kitty cat in my lap here. Who I'm stroking his head right now.
Well, hello.
Welcome to my lair.
You know what, John, I need to do
what?
Right off the bat.
What's that?
Before I even ask you the question that I have for tonight, mm-hmm. I need to mention somebody that I met at Dragon Con
yep.
that I did not mention in our last podcast, and I would be remiss if I did not mention this gentleman.
It's a terrible thing to be remiss, Matthew.
It is, and that's why I'm going to fix that right now. Aaron Goins is a great guy, and he also hosts the Star Wars Bookworms podcast, as well as Bad Wolf Radio, a Doctor Who podcast. And, you know, I got to hang out with him a lot. We went to a couple panels together. We were on a panel together about canon, and I did not mention him in the last podcast, and I needed to give him a shout-out here on the show, as well as say, hey, you should be listening to his shows, because, one, great guy, two, he has great shows. So I just wanted to do that right here at the beginning so that it did not happen again.
Fantastic. There's no reason to be remiss now.
There is not. There is not. Now, on top of that, John, I think I've come up with just a humdinger of a question for you.
Ooh, humdinger. I like humdingers. They're interesting.
Me too. You know, they go great with, some nice A1 sauce and, you know, real lean.
Oh, wait, are they a meat product? Maybe I don't like them after all. I don't know.
Okay, so my thought process was, you know, I love Luke Skywalker. I'm going to be honest with you. Luke Skywalker was actually my very first love in Star Wars. As I moved a little bit and got a little bit older, Obi-Wan kind of moved into that spot, but it was Luke that really got me into Star Wars and his storyline in the original trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of thinking about this, and I was thinking, one, what is it about Luke Skywalker that we kind of love so much? But two, what is it about Luke Skywalker that enables him to make a different decision than his father does? What makes him different than Anakin?
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, do you mean what is it that that sort of what about his decision-making process is different than Anakin? Or
I think one is his decision-making process. But, I mean, okay, really, I think it's about the question of what is it that I think there's a lot of things. There's life experience, there's everything that's happened to them, there's how they were raised. I mean, I think there's so much that kind of goes into this question for us to be able to unpack tonight. So wherever you kind of want to start, I think we've got just plenty of places to go.
Sure. At its root, I would say that Luke starts with the advantage of growing up in, as stern as it was, if not a loving, then a stable household. Anakin was raised by committee, if you will. Even though
Luke,
yeah, basically,
Luke.
but even if you know, like Anakin was raised by committee, Anakin was, told his whole life he's the chosen one, he's special, he's all of this stuff. Basically, they raised him wrong in every
possible way. So you're saying that Anakin was the original millennial?
Yeah, essentially. Yes, he was. Yes. He was coddled and told he was special at every turn. But Luke grows up in a stable household, but one that is very far away from sort of the corrupting influence. If you're on a planet, if there's a bright side of the universe, you're on the planet that it's farthest from. he is remote. And I think that sort of farm mentality, you know, which of course Lucas put in there purposely to harken back, you know, to the old farmstead, almost like the Superman sort of thing, where he's, you know, he's from Kansas.
Yeah.
You know, he's raised in the middle of nowhere, far away from the city. And look at it, look at the key difference between Batman and Superman, right?
That's a good call out. I think it's something I hadn't really ever thought of before.
Cool. But I you know, I would say that what essentially makes Luke different is he. Anakin says to Palpatine at one point, "The Sith think inwardly only of themselves, and the Jedi, you know, they're motivated by doing good things, service to others." And Luke is the one that grows up consistently with this idea of self-sacrifice. He's always giving up what he wants to do what's right for the family, whereas Anakin is much more indulged to think of self. So I just think that's sort of the key with them up to a certain point. You know, what is it that you think makes him tick?
You know, it's interesting because both of these men are raised with a lot of love. You know, I think of Anakin, he is raised with a lot of love from his mother. You know, he's probably told that he is a special boy, that she loves him, that she cares for him, that, you know, he's important to her. You know, there's so much, I think, in that. You know, and Luke, I think that Aunt Beru and Uncle Owen love Luke very much. I think they have come to care for him just as if they, you know, had him as their own child. You know, Uncle Owen is kind of hard on Luke, but very much the same way that I think he's reminiscent of a lot of the fathers that you would have seen in the 70s who were, you know, stern with their kids but had a lot of love for them at the same time. It was kind of tough love, you know. And I think it's interesting because I don't think that Anakin grows up with a lot of tough love. I think he probably just grows up with a lot of, I don't even know what word to put it in, but you know, he that's not really needed for him because he already has a pretty sucky life.
Well, I mean, I think the Jedi are very indulgent of him.
That is definitely the case. Once he moves, I was specifically thinking of just being on their desert planets before, you know, basically they're found, you know.
Okay.
But I think you're absolutely right. The moment that he is found by the Jedi, even Qui-Gon makes, I think, the mistake of kind of treating Anakin in a way that he might not have even treated Obi-Wan as an apprentice, where he's giving him a lot more leeway, you know, and he's already treating him as special because he's willing to set aside Obi-Wan for Anakin. And Anakin is, you know, kind of sensing this, seeing this, you know, and then, of course, the whole Jedi Order is willing to set aside everything that they believe in. Basically, when it comes to the rules of training the Jedi.
Well, I mean, yeah, sure. I mean, Qui-Gon basically forswears Obi-Wan in front of Anakin and says, you know, I'm willing to ditch Obi-Wan and take Anakin as my Padawan learner. But, you know, it's interesting because while you've been talking about, you know, the environments they've been raised in, something that I think would be fascinating would be to look at, like, you know, we don't have a whole lot of evidence on film to look at it, but like there's sort of a fascinating difference that I pick up on in between Klieg and Owen Lars that I just think is really fascinating to behold, because my impression of Klieg Lars is that he's more gentle and nurturing than Owen wound up being.
Klieg probably really loved his son, but I think that maybe Shmi was a little bit more reserved with Owen, and you know, for Klieg that was his only son, you know. He never had another son, but you know, for Shmi, she has another son that's out there saving the galaxy, being a Jedi. And maybe that kind of comes through, and maybe a little bit of resentment, and maybe that's why Uncle Owen is a little bit harder on, you know, Luke than maybe he would have been, or at least that's what we see. You know, what I think is most interesting is that Luke seems to have a very level head. You know, I think that's, to me, the main difference. Luke has very normal, everyday... He's a normal, everyday type of person. You know, his dreams are to go away and be a part of the Imperial Academy and fly ships. Like, very, very much the same way that, you know, anybody might think, you know, I'm going to go join the military, fly fighter jets, or I want to, you know, that kind of thing. Anakin has such a different experience where his dream is... I came and I freed the slaves. Like, he has such a different experience, and I think he's always kind of tainted by that, and he's never able to really let that go. Does that make sense at all?
I don't know that I agree that Luke is level-headed. I think that he's impetuous like anybody shy of 20 would be, but I think that you're on to something where that he's impetuous in a different way than, like, he, because... I think Luke's impetuousness is the desire to get out and make his own way,
right.
Whereas Anakin
right.
is just sort of a spoiled brat a lot of times. But what's really interesting to me is I actually have been looking, you know, with new eyes at The Force Awakens a lot, and, you know, knowing that Abrams' core question was, who is Luke Skywalker? And it was funny because it came to me as I was rewatching The Dark Knight Rises recently, that Luke has a sort of, when we meet him again in The Force Awakens, the last time we saw him, everything was victorious, but at this point he's run away from the world. So there's a line mm-hmm. in Dark Knight Rises where Talia says to Bruce, she says, you have a practiced apathy, but, and I'm mangling the line right now, but somebody who doesn't care doesn't run away when his dream project fails. And I think that Anakin's dreams get compromised. When his desires get circumvented, he gets angry, he lashes out, he punishes.
Right.
Whereas I think that it's fascinating that Luke, obviously we know something very bad happened between episode 6 and episode 7. I think that one of the key factors drawing a line between the two of them is Luke withdraws himself. When Luke sees that there is a problem and it may be tied to him, he goes off, and if Han is to be believed, in search of the First Jedi Temple, he goes off searching for answers and a way to fix things without rushing out and trying to beat life into submission. I think that's a key core difference between the two characters, is Luke is broken in some way and he withdraws to try to figure out how to fix it. Anakin gets broken and he decides he wants to punish the world.
Well, and I think that can all be driven back to the fact that, you know, Anakin grows up in a world where nothing is under his control, and then he's brought into a world as a Jedi where everything seems like it can be under my control because I have the Force. You know, Luke grows up in a way in which there are certain things that are under his control. There are certain things that aren't under his control. He kind of has an understanding of how the universe works correctly before he learns the Force. And it's never as though he's trying to make the world fit within his image of the way that he thinks it should be. Luke seems to be much more natural in the sense that, and I would say Jedi-like, that he is going with the flow of the Force and not trying to make the Force bend to his will, which is very much what I think Anakin does. And I think that partly that goes back to his, you know, roots as a slave.
Sure.
But I also think that that's Anakin's personality, and that's compounded by the fact that, as we said, Anakin is continually told that he's special. So you put that together, it's a pretty toxic brew that they, you know, poor Anakin has.
But see, now I want to take a look at it in terms of, you know, the motivations of the characters. I think you hit on something interesting there. I mean, we're sitting here, we're talking about how, you know, I'm saying, you know, Anakin's trying to beat the world down for hurting him. You're pointing out Anakin wants to control everything, which is absolutely true. I think it was Lucas himself said on a documentary that, you know, the desire to help turns into the desire to control, and that's a very corrupting influence. So, you know, I think that's spot on. But you say Luke follows the will of the Force, but let's look at the point in Empire Strikes Back. Is he following the will of the Force when he goes off to Bespin? Because I would contend that he isn't. And I'll give you my interpretation of that, is that Luke's not following the will of the Force, but the reason it doesn't go wrong for him is that he realizes his mistake. Granted, he's lost a hand and been told that Space Hitler is his father, but granted, it's self-sacrifice. He's essentially throwing his life away when he jumps off, but he takes a step to make things right, to, you know, say, okay, mistake was made. I understand what I did wrong. I understand what comes of this. Would you read that the same way?
I think that you are reading it correctly, because I think that's one of the things where in which the prequels and the original trilogy really line up, in the sense that both men are impetuous. Both men tend to think with their heart instead of their head and act that way. And the scary thing is that, you know, if you're watching sequentially, especially for the first time, you see Luke make that mistake and you're like, oh no, he's going to go down the Anakin path. You know, he's going to choose the same thing. And they both have the decision to choose that. But I think you're exactly right that Luke, there is something inside of him, especially when he, you know, he's learned that, you know, Vader is his father, and he's hanging there and he realizes, I will die before I turn and join this evil. Whereas Anakin, when faced with that choice, is, well, you're evil, you know, to the Jedi. You know, he does that, again, he kind of does that millennial thing, where, and I'm sorry for any millennials that are listening, I apologize.
No, he's not. But he's lying, everybody. He's turned to the dark side.
Yeah, we'll just call it that spoiled brat kind of thing, where they just turn it around because they don't want to take personal responsibility. Luke takes personal responsibility for the choice that he made and chooses to not join Vader, to sacrifice himself, to kill himself before he can be turned to the dark side and be made to service evil, you know? Whereas Anakin will just be like, well, I'll just, you know, it's not my fault. They made me do it. You know, they turned against me. You know, that maybe they're the ones that are evil. So he can twist it to his own certain point of view. But, you know, it's not really true.
Yeah, you know, and it's actually the certain point of view thing, which is something that I think Star Wars fans have been grappling with since May 1983. Like, again, it draws the comparison again with Dark Knight Rises with me, because that whole thing is about, you know, victory without truth is meaningless. And
right.
So, I, you know, is that what breaks Luke and makes him? I mean, granted, again, we have the nebulously tragic thing we know happens between 6 and 7. We don't know specifically how it goes down, but we know that something happened that involved Kylo Ren and a lot of death, apparently. But it's that whole thing of, like, I guess sort of like metaphorically or story wise, and I guess, you know what, maybe it's Bloodline provides a keystone here, that when that truth comes out that's discussed in the book, you know, is that the first breaking point for Luke? Is Luke so dedicated? Is Luke more dedicated to truth, therefore, playing on what you've been saying, is Luke more dedicated to truth than Anakin was? Anakin thinks he's being a champion for his own perverted form of justice, but Luke seems to be a champion of truth. I've accepted the truth that you were once my father, Anakin Skywalker. Vader's response is, that name no longer has any meaning for me. And Luke says, that's the name of your true self. So maybe it's that Luke is a champion of truth above everything else, whereas Anakin is a champion of perspective.
I love that. I think that that's really interesting, because I think what's, especially to just parse, you know, what Obi-Wan says, and I think the reason you never see Luke completely upset at them is because he can see the truth in what Obi-Wan said. And I think once they have the conversation in Jedi, Luke can also see the reasoning behind why those two didn't tell him that immediately. You know, why they waited until maybe Luke was ready to hear the truth. Because truth, as anybody knows, can be painful and hurtful. And sometimes you have to be in the right place to be able to actually hear it and then begin to digest it. I don't think Luke would have been in that place right at the beginning. He shows up on Dagobah and they're like, oh, by the way, just so you know, FYI, your daddy is...
Yeah, Vader. You know, it's funny you say that, though, because watching the, watching The Empire Strikes Back closely, and, you know, and it's there from the beginning, and you sort of see it, but, like, if you... Let's take this theme of truth and look at it. Yoda keeps giving Luke hints of the truth. Yoda mm-hmm. wants Luke to discover the truth the whole time. Right. Like he keeps leaving hints for him, and Luke is just sort of, you know, to, even the magic tree gives him hints. You know, Yoda's, oh, right. Father, powerful Jedi was he. And then Luke sees himself in Vader's mask, and then, you know, spoilers. And it's one of those things where, yeah, you know, I think we're onto something. I think we've discovered something. But like in terms of this, we have no idea what's going to happen in episode 8, right? We're still years away as we're recording this. But thematically, not specific, not story beat wise, but thematically, where do you see this going for Luke? What territory do you think they go into? Whatever the next story points are, we have no idea what those are going to be, but we know that there's going to be a theme. There's going to be a driving theme behind everything. What do you think carries Luke through from this point forward?
Well, I think Luke does have a commitment to being true to the Jedi and the truest form of who the Jedi were. And so I think what's most interesting is how we're going to learn what that first, you know, Jedi Academy that he had was like, and what he learned from the mistake, and where he'll go forward with Rey. And I think that it's going to be very interesting because we're going to really dive into some Force lore I think that we've never gotten before. A lot in the ways that, forgive the reference for any non-Harry Potter fans, but in the way in which the very last book of Harry Potter, The Deathly Hallows, we learned about wand lore and mm-hmm. really how that works, and that played into the ending of the series. I think that's going to happen for the Force, for the Jedi, and for Luke in that series. And so I think it's going to be very interesting to kind of watch him deal with and grapple with those issues, and then of course how he'll deal with Rey. So I'm really excited to see that. I think it's also going to be very exciting because we've seen Anakin have a Padawan, right? We've seen him yeah. deal with Ahsoka, and this will be the first time in which we actually get to see Luke deal with his own Padawan. We've never seen that before. So I'm very excited. All of this together makes for some really interesting prospects.
Now, see, it's interesting because the Ahsoka thing definitely occurs, I'm going to say, in the margins. You and me, yeah, the Ahsoka thing happened. But there are plenty of people like my wife where Ahsoka does not exist and never has. You know, like, so I think it'll be interesting territory for anybody who hasn't seen Anakin. It'll be a new experience to see a Skywalker have a Padawan of some sort at all. And the thing that I've been thinking about is, and I know that this may seem, heretical in a way in terms of Star Wars lore, because the episodes all deal with the Skywalker family. But we already know that we're going into sort of like a different area than maybe even Lucas intended. Who knows? Maybe they're going that way, but they're just using a different path. Who knows? But the thing that I think we might discover, what Luke might be discovering, what might have driven him away, the truth he might have found out about himself and the Skywalker clan in general, is I've begun wondering if maybe with this sequel trilogy, he's discovered and again, not story point specific, but thematically, that the time of the Skywalkers is done, that there shouldn't be a Skywalker in the driver's seat anymore, because you had one who wrecked everything, you had one that restored everything, and maybe Luke's realization is that he shouldn't be leading everything. He should be passing the torch on and have no involvement. He should be withdrawn from everything in the galaxy. Not necessarily the way that he did it, not necessarily, you know, in such a way that it wound up with him, you know, living in the, you know, monastically on an island on a what appears to be a water planet. But do you see what I'm getting at? One of the things that drove Luke away was that the truth he found was that the Skywalkers wrecked it, the Skywalkers fixed it, and now it's somebody else's turn to run it.
I don't think I see it going that way, because I think that the episodes will always be the Skywalker saga. And honestly, I think what we are going to learn is that, and Luke will have learned, is that Ben comes to Luke already kind of troubled. You know, Leia is sent Ben to Luke because she senses that there's something not quite right about her son that she doesn't feel like she can fix. And she sends him to Luke to hopefully keep that from growing in him, in a lot of the same ways that the Jedi have a bad feeling about Anakin, and yet they train him anyway. So what I think we might find out is that Luke regrets making the decision of saying yes to his sister and not saying no when what Ben didn't need was to be given more power. What Ben needed was just more involved parents.
because the thing is, that gets back to what we were saying made Anakin and Luke different, was a stable home.
Right, exactly. And Luke had that for 18 years, 19 years, and then, you know, he finds out that there is something a little bit different about him, but then he already has 19 years of experience of stability, of, you know,
well,
you know,
okay, but
good,
see,
love and...
But see, as sort of, I guess, sort of a closing point that ties to it then, is we're obviously getting into the territory where it's Rey's story, right? Rey comes from a more Anakin-style background. Are we basically painting Rey into a corner, or is she going to break out of this box, break out of this mold that we paint Anakin into, where we say, oh, well, you know, broken home as a young child, not completely healed, as evidenced by the flashback that we see of her being left behind with Unkar Plutt, all of these sorts of things. Are we predicting an Anakin type of pathway for Rey?
No, because I think what we're trying to establish, and I think that Lucas does very well in all the Star Wars that he did, and if they're wise, they pick up on this, is that Anakin makes decisions. Yes, there's all of these extenuating circumstances around Anakin that help foster him in one way, and yet in the end, it's really Anakin choosing to do what he did. The same thing with Luke. Luke has extenuating circumstances about who he is and what makes him who he is, but at the same time, Luke chooses to be who he is and chooses to make the right decision. I think what was going to be really interesting with Rey, hopefully, is to finally see that character who does come from desolation and, you know, destruction, a planet that's on the back hind end of space. She's treated horribly, but that is able to make the right decisions. And plenty of people in this world have come from the world's worst upbringing and become the world's best people because they made the decision to do that.
Sure.
And so I think that's going to be, and that's a really powerful story, I think, as well. So, you know, I think we've seen two different ways, and now I think we kind of get a combination maybe of both. And what I think would be interesting to me is that Rey is basically a combination of Anakin and Luke, and the merging of the two. So in a lot of ways, like the clip that we've seen online with the Bendu talking to Kanan Jarrus, somebody who's in the middle, who's able to take both the yin and the yang and simultaneously hold them together in themselves. I think that's the character that we've not had in Star Wars
But
yet.
See, it's so funny because that's the character I always interpreted Luke as being at the end of Return of the Jedi. Was Luke was part machine, dressed in black, but a good guy, and had found the right place for emotion, balanced with intellect. And so, like, that's the thing that I really need to see answered in Episode 8 is where did Luke... What happened? Luke was that meld. Luke was the fulfillment. Like, I wrote a blog series a long time ago debating who is the real chosen one, because we hear this prophecy of the chosen one. And the needle...
Will the real chosen one please stand up?
Yeah, right? But the needle wound up kind of pointing at Luke at the end of it, because he is the one that synthesizes all of those things. Was it a false... Like, was it like fool's gold? Right.
What I think it is that we're continuing the saga because Disney bought Star Wars and decided that they wanted to continue the story. And so I think that in the end, honestly, Luke is going to be retroactively changed what his position is.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, Lucas was working on pre-production at the time that he sold to Disney.
That is true. But they did not use a lot of his story elements, if any, that we know of. So
okay, well, I know that the ghost of Darth Vader was discarded in favor of burned up Darth Vader helmet, for example. But yeah, okay, that's true. I mean, like, that's the big, you know, X factor for us, I guess, is the fact, and we've made reference to this continually, that, like, we're sort of in the dark now too, because Lucas for us had become... No, I'm not going to say predictable, because there are plenty of surprises that he threw at us along the way, but we knew the direction we would go. Like, if Lucas had been in the driver's seat with this, we know where we would have been pointed, at least, even if we, you know, juked left and right every so often. Like, we knew the general direction we'd go.
I think it all comes back to this idea. One of the things that really sets Luke apart is Luke is the character in which we really, I think most people, when they watch the original trilogy, they see themselves in Luke for the most part. And Anakin is the character that we don't want to see ourselves as, but we end up acting a lot like a lot of the time. You know, Anakin is the character that drives us crazy to watch, because we're angry at ourselves for watching ourselves make those same decisions a lot of the times in our lives. Luke is the character we all want to be. Anakin is the character that we tend to be more often, I think. And I think that's what is so special about Luke and kind of sets him apart, is that, you know, he does make some mistakes as he walks through his journey in the original trilogy. But he also is a character who overcomes those mistakes, and also does it with a real sense of grace. And I think it's that grace that unlocks the heart of Darth Vader. You know, the grace to say that no matter what you were in the past, you don't have to continue being that.
Sure.
No matter how bad you were, you can still be saved.
Oh, absolutely.
And I
absolutely.
Think that's a really, you know, that's, I think, the thing that, you know, it sets Luke apart, because Anakin was never about that. Again, he was not about trying to really help people. He was just trying to get what he could for himself.
Sure.
And that's, I think, it's a really powerful thing. It's a really beautiful picture that we, I think, enjoy watching over and over again.
Well, I mean, to get back to something that Lucas said in a 1997 interview with New Yorker magazine, the reporter asked Lucas what the saga was ultimately about, because remember, the prequels hadn't come out yet, but they asked him what the saga was ultimately about for him, and he replied with one word: redemption. And that's, you know, that, I mean, obviously there's still a lot of questions. I think that this is really, I think this is the type of topic where I think people are going to have some pretty strong opinions. And so I think that it would be great to hear from you, the listeners. Let us know where you fall. What makes Anakin and Luke different at their core? What is it that made them different? Was there, and you know, from both sides, like, what is it in themselves that makes them, you know, that what makes the key difference between them, and what is it in their upbringing that made them turn out ever so differently? Because again, getting back to the tone poem idea, what is it that was slightly different in the second stanza from the first that made it different?
I think it's funny, and I'll direct everybody over to the 602 Club episode that we did on A New Hope with Riley and Bethany Blanton called Hashtag Aunt Beru. I think a lot of it has to do with Luke and his stable upbringing and an upbringing of people who genuinely cared about him and treated him just like a normal person. You know, I think in the end, the moment you start treating a person, a child, with deference and telling them that they're special all the time, it has a huge impact on the psyche of a child who's not ready to handle that kind of talk or responsibility. You know, I can't even imagine what Anakin feels all of the time being told, oh, you're the chosen one. I mean, not really Jesus, what's it like being told you're the savior? That's a tough road to hoe.
Well, you can get a clever view of that in Matthew Stover's novelization of Revenge of the Sith. But you know what else?
That's true.
You know what else people can get? Is if they're looking to support Aggressive Negotiations and the Nerd Party, which is also home to the Filibuster, the Senate Floor, and Nerd Nuptial, you can head on over to Loot Crate, which is a terrific service. It's a partner of the network and of Aggressive Negotiations, where you get a monthly assortment of goodies shipped to your door at your convenience. And you just go over to lootcrate.com/nerdparty, enter the code nerdparty at checkout, and you will get that box of goodies once a month, and you'll get a discount, and you'll help the show.
Which they really should do, John, because we need their help. We love their support. And if you love everything that we do here on Aggressive Negotiations and the Nerd Party, yeah, help us out. I mean, you know,
absolutely.
Help us out.
And if you can't wait, if you're listening to this and you think, I can't compose all of my thoughts all at once, you can reach out to us at an@thenerdparty.com. That's our email address. And you can reach out to us on Twitter at our official Twitter handle, which is @TheJediMasters, or the network Twitter handle, which is @JoinNerdParty. Now, Matt, where can people find you online?
Well, of course, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me on the network called Trek FM, where I do the 602 Club, as we mentioned. We have all sorts of great shows there for you all throughout fandom, plus the Star Wars feed as well. So you've got the 602 Club and Star Wars, the 602 Club collections. You can check both of those out. I think you're going to love them, as well as doing Literary Treks with Dan Gunther and Bruce Gibson, where we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek, which is a lot of fun. Getting a chance to interview the authors. In fact, we talked to Star Wars author John Jackson Miller about his upcoming Star Trek series. So if you want to check that out, make sure you do. And then, of course, I'm doing The Orb with Chris Jones, where we're talking about Deep Space Nine. Now, John, I know that there are plenty of places that you are over on the interwebs, the HoloNet. Hmm. Where can everybody find you?
Well, much like you, they can find me over on the Trek FM network, co-hosting Stage 9, a podcast about the work of Star Trek creators that I co-host with Mike Schindler. And you can find me on another podcast called Words with Nerds with my pal Craig, where we get a little zany from time to time. And you can just look for Kessel Junkie on your social network of choice. I'll be on it at some point or another. But Matt, I think there's only one thing left to say. I think it's time to close negotiations.
John, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.